Second case for argument this morning is Eisenkorp versus Rocky Mountain Radar. Mr. Pagel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Attorney Brian Pagel, representing Plaintiff Appellant Eisenkorp Incorporated in this matter. As the Court knows, this has come up on a review of a summary judgment decision dismissing this case made by the Honorable Judge Crabb in District Court, and in preparing for this argument, it struck me that, with no disrespect to this Court, it's a shame it had to come this far, because under Wisconsin law, Eisenkorp's submissions on summary judgment should have been more than enough to go to a jury. The case that really seems to control and that should really be analyzed in determining whether Eisenkorp should have survived summary judgment in this matter is the Wisconsin case of Bush versus National School Sales. As mentioned in our brief, it's 139 Wis Second 635. In that case, a photographer who had been employed for 21 years submitted his payments for school photographs to the company, which then paid commissions, issued checks to him, issued him a W-2 form. He described himself, in fact, as an employee of the business, had to purchase all his goods through them and promote the business through them. And when he was terminated, he sued under the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law and was found to be a dealer. That case, on its facts, is remarkably similar to what happened with Eisenkorp in this case. And simply on that basis should have been enough to show the district court and should be enough to show this court that Eisenkorp created an issue of fact sufficient to get to a jury and present its case to a jury. And that would have happened, but the district court, in an effort to do justice in this case, frankly overstepped its bounds. It sat as the trier of fact, and in doing so, bought into a version of events created by Rocky Mountain Radar, a version of events and factors which were created at the end of this relationship between the parties and created solely to benefit Rocky Mountain Radar and solely to sidestep the protections of the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. Rocky Mountain Radar, at the heart of this case, convinced the district court that a sales rep contract existed and that that sales rep contract was what controlled the relationship between these parties and that that sales rep contract is the only contract that might have been terminated. That sales rep contract, in our opinion, never existed, but there certainly was a factual dispute about whether a sales rep contract existed, period. Eisenkorp, through its president, Ryan Eisenhut, denied ever agreeing to a sales rep contract. Michael Churchman, the owner-operator of Rocky Mountain Radar, agreed that Ryan Eisenhut never agreed to go into a sales rep agreement. Rocky Mountain Radar's entire state of practices argues against the existence of this sales rep agreement. The first time there's any sort of evidence whatsoever that a sales rep agreement existed in anyone's mind is when Doug Jones for Rocky Mountain Radar faxed down a letter that says we're going to terminate your sales rep agreement, a fact which Ryan Eisenhut recognized there was no sales rep agreement. He noted that right on the letter. Doug Jones then clarified the exact relationship between Rocky Mountain Radar and Eisenkorp at that point by calling and saying, I'm just going to terminate you. But going back to the very start of this, that sales rep agreement appears to have been made up entirely in February of that year simply to get around the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. And Eisenkorp pointed out on summary judgment why this should go to a jury to determine if there was such a contract in the first instance, because if there wasn't, the only contract that could have been terminated was the dealership contract. And the district court never reached that. The district court, though, began by deciding there were two agreements. At page 17 of its decision, it notes, accordingly, these two agreements will be evaluated separately under the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. It then goes on to decide that there is a sales rep agreement and then concludes that only the sales representative agreement was terminated, thereby never reaching the agreement, the question of whether the dealer agreement was terminated. So what you have here is Rocky Mountain Radar invents a sales representative agreement, and by that invention, by that fabrication, frankly, exempts itself out of a law that was designed, in this case, expressly to protect companies like Eisenkorp. The imbalance between these two companies is, again, another factor that was pointed out on summary judgment and that should have warranted the district court sending this matter to a jury to decide those factors that would play into the two prongs of what the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said have to be considered when you're trying to determine whether dealership law applies in this case. And we never reached that stage because the district court bought into Rocky Mountain Radar's version of events, and the district court just decided, despite the contradictions in facts between the two parties that it was going to decide this case on affidavits. When we have, and then we get to the question, the district court says, even if the sales rep agreement existed and it was the only one that was terminated, that's the second prong where the district court again decided an issue of fact, because Ryan Eisenhut testified very clearly that Douglas Jones for Rocky Mountain Radar called him up, said to him, I'm just going to terminate you now. He then testified that he made two phone calls to Rocky Mountain Radar, neither of which were returned. The evidence submitted to the district court showed that Rocky Mountain Radar continued to work with Barjan, the colossal customer that had set off this whole string of events, and Ryan Eisenhut and EisenCorp never had any dealings again with Rocky Mountain Radar until they retained our firm and threatened to sue them when Rocky Mountain Radar again said, wait, we never terminated you. Again, backing themselves out of the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. So that's the state of the evidence submitted by EisenCorp. Rocky Mountain Radar says that's not true. We terminated only the sales rep agreement that may or may not have existed. And the district court then said, the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law doesn't protect people from their interpretations of contracts. And on that basis decided that no one could have interpreted this as a termination of the dealership agreement, and therefore it didn't have to again reach whether the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law protected EisenCorp. And again, that was an improper resolution of a question of fact. You had very clearly disparate opinions here. Rocky Mountain Radar says we never terminated your dealership agreement, but acknowledges that they had no further dealings with them for at least several months and wouldn't return phone calls while dealing with EisenCorp's most important customer directly. EisenCorp says, no, you terminated me, you terminated our company, and you wouldn't deal with us. And the district court says no one could conclude that that was a termination of the dealership contract. I think that was an issue for the jury to decide. The jury should have listened to the testimony, should have listened to these two parties talk about what might have existed and what might not have existed between them, and then decided whether a sales rep agreement existed. If so, was it terminated? If it wasn't, if there wasn't a sales rep agreement, then the only thing that could have been terminated was the dealership contract, and was that, in fact, terminated by Rocky Mountain Radar? When you look at this case, under Wisconsin law especially, EisenCorp submitted enough evidence to get to a jury. Again, I'd refer this court to the Bush versus National School Sales case and the incredible similarity on the facts between those two. And in addition, a final brief comment, the district court also referred to Team Electronics versus Apple Computers. And I've referenced this in the brief. I don't think this court is bound by that. I don't think this court has to follow Team Electronics versus Apple Computers. That was a state of law created by the district court in the Western District of Wisconsin. As Judge Crabb noted in this case, the factors set out in Team Electronics do not clearly apply to a situation where you have an EisenCorp with one employee, a corporation that does exist, that does have a business, but doesn't exist on the same state of affairs as, say, an IBM or a mobile company. And on the other hand, you have another small business, Rocky Mountain Radar, with its 11 employees. And so I think what needs to be done is return to Wisconsin law, look at the totality of the factors, look at the interrelationship between the businesses, go back to the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law itself and the policies set forth by the Wisconsin legislature. This law was put out there to protect small companies who invest, in essence, their entire existence into working with another company, as EisenCorp did. It was created and blossomed from a company that didn't exist in August of 1999 to a company with $500,000 in gross sales 2 years later, solely on the strength of its relationship with Rocky Mountain Radar and solely on the strength of its relationship with Barjan, its most important customer. Rocky Mountain Radar, in an effort to undermine that relationship, cut EisenCorp off intentionally and deliberately and in violation of the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. When one gets away from determining the facts and looks at this as a case that should go to the jury, and when one looks at the policies behind the Fair Dealership Law in Wisconsin, it seems evident to the plaintiff appellant that this case should go to a jury. So we respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's decision and remand this case for a trial.
Thank you, Mr. Pagel.
Thank you.
Mr. Lansing? Excuse me, Mr. Waskowski. Waskowski.
May it please the court, I'm Ted Waskowski. I represent Rocky Mountain Radar. First, let me clear up one thing. Judge Crabb did not take this case away from a jury. This case was scheduled for a court trial, as the record would show. What she decided is there was nothing to try. The undisputed evidence clearly shows that there were two contracts in this case, and that only the sales representative contract was terminated. And I'd like to briefly review the evidence to talk about that. The dealer contract was signed in 1999. The sales representative agreement was entered in May of 2001. That is, I believe, undisputed. On page 19 and 20 of our brief, we cite the deposition testimony in which Mr. Eisenhut agreed to that. Second, the stark differences between the two contracts. Under the dealership contract, Eisenkorp buys and resells. Under the sales representative agreement, Mr. Eisenhut earns commissions. Under the dealer agreement, Eisenkorp is at risk of non-payment by his customers. Under the sales representative agreement, Mr. Eisenhut has no such risk. Under the dealer agreement, Rocky Mountain Radar pays Eisenkorp nothing. Under the sales rep agreement, Mr. Eisenhut receives commissions. Under the dealer agreement, Eisenkorp can resell to anyone. Under the sales rep agreement, Rocky Mountain Radar can reject any order placed or sent in by Mr. Eisenhut. The dealer agreement is with Eisenkorp, and the sales rep agreement is with a different party, Mr. Eisenhut. Now, Mr. Eisenhut complains that, well, the checks were made out to Eisenkorp, but it's undisputed that that was done at his request. Mr. Eisenhut asked that it be done that way. He was a subchapter S, and all the income flows to him ultimately anyway. Continuing on the absolute stark differences between the two contracts on the on price, on the dealer agreement, Eisenkorp can set any price it wants. On the sales rep agreement, Rocky Mountain Radar can reject any order for any reason, including it doesn't like the price. Under the dealer agreement, Eisenkorp was selling on the Internet. Under the sales rep agreement, Mr. Eisenhut was dealing with Barjan 1&1. Under the dealer agreement, the contract was unlimited by customer. Under the sales rep agreement, there only was one customer involved in that agreement, Barjan. This is undisputed evidence. The two contracts could not be more different. They are contradictory, and one you buy and resell and one you don't. The basic difference in the contracts. None of these things are disputed. Mr. Eisenhut pointed in his brief to a few things which make no difference. That the sales representative agreement wasn't written. Well, Mr. Eisenhut was offered a written agreement. Plus, the agreement was intended to be temporary until Mr. Eisenhut got financing. They could not be more distinct. They couldn't be more different from each other, or put another way, or more fundamental way, I think. That is, if there wasn't a separate agreement just for Barjam, the sales representative agreement, how in the world did the parties know what to do? What would tell them what to do? Now, in fact, under Team Electronics, which I think is a well-reasoned case in the Western District, which certainly is a case that makes perfect sense, and we urge you to consider strongly. In Team Electronics, Judge Shabazz pointed out that in that contract it became more distinct. And these two contracts even became more distinct because in May of 2001, the sales rep agreement was formed. And in February of 2002, the commission was fixed at 6%, same as all other sales representatives. So that is one issue. Another issue raised by Mr. Eisenhut was that, well, all of the other sales representatives that Rocky Mountain Radar had were not dealers. We think under Team Electronics, Judge Chick Crabb said that's not an issue. Doesn't make a difference. There's no reason why they can't be. But we think to the extent that we agree with her, but we think that to the extent it makes a difference, it shows that the sales representative is a separate set of activities, which of course it is. Mr. Eisenhut also says that he processed returns. Well, that's a non-issue as well. He didn't have to. He was told he didn't have to. He wanted to. He wanted to for obvious reasons, which are in the record, but they have nothing. They do not help his argument. No rational trier of fact could find for Mr. Eisenkorp on Mr. Eisenhut on this issue. Excuse me for the two name problems. Now, it's equally undisputed. There was no dispute that the dealer agreement was not terminated. There's a letter dated February 5th. It's addressed to Ryan Eisenhut, not to Eisenkorp, which was the dealer agreement. It states clearly that the sales representative agreement will be terminated in 30 days. Mr. Eisenhut took that letter, went to his dealer agreement, and wrote on it, "This is not a sales rep agreement." That's what he did. He realized that the dealer agreement had not been terminated. But then what he did is tremendously instructive. He called twice when he got the letter, didn't get a letter back, never called again, never sent in another order, not one, just to see what would happen. Has absolutely no explanation in the record for why he would do that. Never asked to be reinstated. To the extent that he was confused by what had happened, that confusion should have been entirely eliminated in Mr. Churchman's, the president of Rocky Mountain Radar, his letter of April 7, 2003, where he says unequivocally, Eisenkorp is still free to buy. And the fact is, Eisenkorp is still free to buy from Rocky Mountain Radar today. But still no orders. No explanation. What happened could not be clearer. No rational trier of fact could find that Eisenkorp's right to buy had been terminated. There is simply no evidence on Eisenkorp's side of the table on this issue. What he says is that he has a subjective belief, a belief that doesn't change even when he's expressly told that he's wrong. What could there possibly be for Judge Crabb to try here? Why would we have a trial because the man, for reasons unknown to us, never sent in another order? I respectfully suggest that this would be an extremely poor use of Judge Crabb's time. No one said here, Eisenkorp is terminated, in writing, orally, or any other way. There's a reason for that. Eisenkorp was not terminated. Now, finally, I'd like to mention that, as I have a little bit of time, that
there's no civic obligation to use all your time.
I'd like to talk about community of interest, if you're interested, Your Honor. Otherwise, I could be complete. Even if you take all of this and put it into one agreement, I would like to say briefly, there's no community of interest, and therefore this does not this contract, even if you throw it all together, doesn't get protection from the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law. Community of interest, you look for interdependence, you look for tangible investments at risk, you look at coordination of efforts. How is it different from a vendor-vendee relationship? And this one is not. There's no inventory. There's no dedicated buildings. There's no tools or special equipment. There's just an Internet site where Mr. Eisenhut also, and Eisenkorp sell Elvis memorabilia and pepper spray and other odds and ends. There's no specialized training. There's no dedicated vehicles. There's no parts. There's no service department. There's no franchise or dealer fee or any of the things. All that's at stake here is the possibility of future profits. That's not recognized as a Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law protecting protected interest under the best case. None of that is disputed. What would be lost? What intangible investment would be lost? Nothing. These are the tangible investments. Make interdependence. And then coordination of efforts. Look at it from that standpoint. There's no assigned territory. There's no exclusive territory. There are no sales targets. There are no sales goals. There's not even a minimum sales goal or a purchase requirement. There's no requirement to advertise. He doesn't have to do anything. And, in fact, I think the record shows you can't tell Mr. Eisenkorp to do anything. There's no interdependency here. There never was. There was a very short relationship. There is no evidence of shared risk. Very small advertising, almost de minimis advertising, and the advertising We haven't seen most of it. There's some television advertising. We haven't seen a tape of the advertising. We don't know what the content was. How does that advertising differ from a typical vendor relationship, which the WFLD does not protect? It doesn't. It simply doesn't. So even if it is not exquisitely clear that there were two contracts, and I think it is exquisitely clear, and even if it's not exquisitely clear that that only the sales rep agreement was terminated, and I think it is exquisitely clear, then there is no dealership anyway, and therefore no claim. And with that, I will thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Roskowski. Mr. Pagel.
Thank you again, Your Honors. And just very briefly, at the heart of what Rocky Mountain Radar wants and what the district court has done here is a theory of law that essentially would exempt small businesses from the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law and turn that law on its head. They keep harping on the fact that EisenCorp only had one employee. They keep harping on the what they claim is a small budget for advertising. And if that's the rule that this court will apply and will apply in the future, one man shows, two man shows, small businesses that are startups will not have any protections under the Fair Dealership Law. And in that respect, in Ziegler versus Rexnord, the Wisconsin Supreme Court noted that although Ziegler had only 1 to 8% of its revenue, depending on how you looked at it, from Rexnord products, that still was sufficient to survive summary judgment.
Do you agree that a bench trial was consented to here?
Yes, and I.
So, what would be the point in remanding? In dealing with summary judgment, the district court was obliged to draw all the inferences in favor of your client. If we remand for a bench trial, that requirement goes away and nothing turns in your favor, so things can only get worse. What would be the point?
The point of it would be that the district court decided this on written submissions and affidavits, and when you have a dispute of fact between this, I think it's incumbent upon...
Is there some credibility dispute here?
Yes, there is, Your Honor.
And what is that?
Because, in our opinion, Rocky Mountain Radar invented the sales representative agreement at the end of the...
No, that's not case. A credibility dispute. Who is it that you think... What is it that you think would be illuminated that's not already in the papers?
The actual transactions between the parties, their motives for fabricating the evidence, just the credibility of whether there was an agreement, what was terminated, what was not, how things were said. The judge has to sit and see these people.
I don't think how things were said could possibly matter under Wisconsin law. Whatever is in this open-ended Wisconsin formula, inflection and tone of voice are not what matter.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, inflection and tone of voice do matter in determining whether a witness is credible. And an affidavit, such as submitted by Mr. Churchman, doesn't help the court determine whether Mr. Churchman is telling the truth or not. It simply sets out a written statement of facts. But the inflection and what was
yes,
said...
Yes, and on summary judgment, all those issues are required to be resolved in your client's favor. That's why I can't see how your client would be better off at a bench trial where the district court could resolve those issues against you.
But that is what the district court did not do. The district court did not resolve those issues in our favor. Rocky Mountain Radar keeps pointing to undisputed evidence, but the basic facts of this case are undisputed. The question of whether there is one or two contracts is disputed by the parties, and the district court resolved that against EisenCorp.
That's question not a credibility question. That's the legal consequences that attach to certain facts.
But the district court resolved questions of fact on affidavits. And in doing so, it did not have the witnesses in front of it to determine their demeanor and their credibility and allow for example, cross-examination and presentation of other evidence and more witnesses. What EisenCorp was interested in doing was simply surviving summary judgment and getting to a trial where it could present the evidence. Because you have to remember, Rocky Mountain Radar filed for summary judgment. And Rocky Mountain Radar controlled what EisenCorp had to respond to. And EisenCorp should be clearly exhibited in the record, didn't feel this case was ripe for summary judgment. Requested on some issues summary judgment to be granted, but repeatedly argued that there were issues of material fact.
Looking at the Barjan sales agreement, and following on Judge Easterbrook's inquiry, what would be illuminated, what facts that have not been considered by district court at the summary judgment stage would could possibly emerge, which could impact the question of law issue of what would be whether it's a separate or distinct agreement.
Whether there was a separate sales representative agreement from the dealership agreement with respect to Barjan specifically.
Right.
What would be illuminated there would be the conversations and the transactions between Mr. Eisenhut and the employees of Rocky Mountain Radar. No affidavits were submitted from Maria, I want to say it's Alfaro, and Doug Jones. Doug Jones actually hadn't been located at the point when Rocky Mountain Radar filed for summary judgment. So there would be more evidence that Eisencorp could present that bore on those transactions. As pointed out.
So it's that insufficient evidence was presented by the plaintiff at the summary judgment level? I mean, affidavits were lacking?
Insufficient evidence was presented by the plaintiff at the summary judgment level to get summary judgment in their favor. Sufficient evidence was presented to get to trial. Summary judgment being a drastic remedy. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the third case.